difference, new excellence.
From Unique FM.
95.7.
We'll be right back after the news.
Transmitting live from the cabin, live from the Unique 95.7.
Behind the news. Time check. It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Live from our national studios in Accra, linking up with all our regional FM stations, this is Kingsley Obinchira welcoming you to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. For tonight, police up in arms against criminal Fulani herdsmen. What has the Fulani community in Ghana done to redeem its image? Abuse of incumbency. How real is it? Does it even pose any threat to democratic development? And also, is the CPP Congress delayed because some officials will not like to lose their positions? More on these ones. But before then, Abraham Donko is here with a summary of the day's news.
The Teachers and Educational Workers Union, too, has threatened industrial action to back their demand for the payment of 15% retention premium. It has therefore called on government to speed up modalities and pay their members before school reopens next month. This came to light at the opening of the 10th Quadrennial National Delegates Conference of the Union in Kumasi. Religious institutions have called on the need for proper management of the oil and gas revenue. Representatives from the Christian Council of Ghana, the Pentecostal Council, the Office of the National Chief Imam emphasized the need to solicit ideas from the public to ensure a proper allocation of revenue from oil and gas resources. The traditional leader, Nana Amankona Nimpong, has advocated the creation of a ministry to oversee all religious activities in the country. Speaking at a media briefing in Sunyani, he said that religion is key in the life of Ghanaians and therefore necessary that those in authority set up a national body that will mandate and address all religious issues.
Behind the news on Radio Ghana, and as usual, we encourage you to send in your text and comments to the text line 026-441-8767, 026-441-8767, and we move on to our first story. The Fulanis are semi-nomadic ethnic groups spreading across the West African sub-region. For years, the Fulani herdsmen have been grazing their cattle in some parts of the country. Much as some of them have remained law-abiding, there are others who have been engaging in criminal activities, including rape and robbery on the highways. Police say the activities of these Fulani herdsmen pose a major threat to the security of the country. The police today held a press conference to talk about the magnitude of the criminal activities of some of the Fulani herdsmen and how the service is dealing with the problem. We have joining us on the line now DCOP John Kudalo, the Director General in charge of police operations, to tell us much more as to what they are doing to curb the menace. DCOP Kudalo, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you, my brother.
Regularly, it's been reported nowadays that Fulani herdsmen are accosting travelers and robbing them of their wares. Is it the fact that the police is finding it difficult to track them down and stop their activities?
I will not say yes, because, in fact, you know, they are very mobile. They are always on the move, and they don't have a permanent residence. I mean, those nomadic, as you said, they are nomads. All the same, we are doing our best to control them. We've used intelligence. In some cases, we have been able to locate some of their settlements. We've raided those places. We've sent teams to areas where we feel they are being endemic and causing problems. Just yesterday, we have returning from operations in the Brahafo and other regions, operational team that we sent to Accra to feed them and then flush them out. You know, we have a very long stretch of roads, and the police have inadequate logistics to police the whole stretch. But now we are concentrating in where these crimes are happening. We're able to locate the very endemic places, and I'm sure that we shall get to the root of the matter. I'll try to control the situation.
Yeah.
The situation is under control, and we hope to stay on top and not let it get out of hand.
Can you tell us some of these endemic places?
Oh, we have the Brahap region. We have the Yeji area. We have the Agogo. We have the Atebubu Amanti area. And then we come to Brekum areas too. We have, but the Brahap region, those have a good pasture for them. And then we're going to go to the northern region too. We have some places that you can find them also around the Kintampo area. Also still in the Brahap region. We come to the eastern region, their front place, the Adosu area, Kou Tafu, and those areas too, they are there. And then Volta region, some parts of Volta region, Panta, the northern part of Volta region, we have also them around the Crash area. We are mapping them up, and then we are mopping them up. And also, we hope that they will not get out of hand. We are concentrating on these endemic places.
Yes.
Harassing them and flashing them out.
Okay. As you mentioned these places, some others will also be asking the question, is it the fact that because the Fulani herdsmen might have had bad name along the line, some Ghanaians or other West African nationals are also hiding behind it and committing crimes, and then we accuse the Fulani herdsmen?
Well, in fact, we are saying Fulani, it's not that they are those who are perpetrating the crimes, but most criminals that have fallen, we've confronted a lot of armed robbers on the road. We are talking about the middle half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those who have fallen have been perceived to be of Fulani extraction. But we don't doubt the fact that they may have Ghanaian accomplices. That's a fact. Maybe that must even have emboldened them. But all those who have fallen in our confrontation with them are all found to be Fulani. That's why we are saying that most of them, of course, there are some of them who are law-abiding, of course.
Yeah, that is fine. So what are you doing to ensure that if there are Ghanaian collaborators, accomplices, they are also quickly flashed out?
Yes, and that's why we are playing to the public that, excuse me, sir, these criminals are not coming from any other planet. They are amongst us. Must try to get information. But when you just go on the roads, we may meet them by chance or if we have intelligence. But if our Ghanaian counterparts, those with whom they stay, amongst whom they stay, will give us adequate information, I'm sure we shall be able to fight them. But besides that, we have the reward system, which is very enticing, and people have given us very good information that has led to arrest of criminals, both Fulanis and non-Fulanis.
Yeah. Let's look at the extent of the threat posed. Some are saying that we are reporting robberies, but now it can even escalate. How do you just determine the extent of threat they pose?
The threat of the post, I would say it's intensive. When I say intensive, there are pockets in areas. And the fact is that whenever they strike, most places there is a fatality. And we are concerned about the fatality, the loss of lives. That makes it more serious. And as I said, in most cases, the people who are fallen, when we confront them, are Fulanis. But fortunately, as I said, it's in the middle belt in the northern part. So we are moving there, we are concentrating. As I told you, that we are locating their settlements and harassing them.
Has it taken some time for you to do this? People started reporting long ago.
No, it's not taking some time. The fact is, I think, as I said, there are these fatalities. Also, we are also crushing them. Also, we are meeting the perpetrators. So, in the past, they have not fallen so much. And we have also been getting them. Our patrol team have been meeting them. Various instances with those on our buses. And we have been confronting them. I think it's becoming a news because the fight is becoming more intense, and then we are becoming more organized so far as the fight against them is coming, and they are now being exposed. As initially, they were doing and getting out of it, so nobody knows who was doing it. As I said, I can count more than 10 instances where we have confronted the robbers on the road, and they are falling, and extraction are perceived to be full. And it's certain because we are carrying the fight to them and making results, that's why it is becoming news. That's what I think.
Yeah, certainly it is a big problem. But if we recollect, even in the late 80s or so, perhaps the early 90s, we heard about Operation Cowleg and these other measures aimed at curbing their influx and all. Did we succeed?
That is a $1 million question. You know, this Fulani chain has been with us all over the years. I remember in the Gold Coast time, there was this in the Capitol Police because of the threat that has been posed by this Fulani. People who had get that is giving special routes. They follow the routes to their crowds, plant their own fodder and other things. So this problem has been there. But they have always been elusive at that time. I think nobody has been getting them. But now we are becoming more organized, and because we are meeting them, boot for boot, not them alone, all the other criminals and robbers. I think that's why the identity is coming up and we are now pointing fingers to them. Because remember the Operation Kaleg, the skitty men who were sent to police them. You find them finally even becoming headsmen and heading the cattle.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very elusive. But I think now we are gaining successes. That's why. And I bet you that it will not get out of hand.
So how often will you be giving information so that perhaps people living within the areas can also be assisting you?
Yes, in fact, as I said, we have been going there. We were there just last week. We were in the Brown Half region, the Northern regions. And before we were leaving, we ensured that there was not a gap. The local police was trained. I mean, they were mobilized, and then they have come to fill in the gap. And I think from our crowd of police, I think rose a lot of confidence in the citizens that the local people that they didn't want us to leave. Now, so that confidence that has been aroused and the trust will let them come up and give us information. And also the reward system. People give us information for the past 2 years that this administration has been controlled, and nobody has been betrayed. So I'm sure that information will come after it has been come. I'll tell you honestly, most of our operations have been intelligence-led.
Some are suggesting now that because of such activities, even traveling in the night should be controlled. Would you share that sentiment?
Yes, I'll say be controlled in investing commerce. In control that they should be escorted. I mean, you know, we have put in place some mechanisms and strategies to control this. Where we have determined that those places are vulnerable, we have burial checkpoints at both sides of that span of road. We escort the people through it and then escort them back. But we cannot stop the people of this country from their free movement. It is our duty to ensure that they get the enabling environment to go about their duty, which we are vowed to do.
Yeah, they may not be Ghanaians. And the natural question is, we are talking about ECOWAS protocols. How do you liaise with the other relevant security agencies to be able to ensure that if they don't come from here, after the 90-day, they are out?
Yes. That's very difficult. These are normals, and I don't know. We are in consultation with the immigration to try to register them from the points as they enter, and let us have a discussion with them. Let us have control and knowledge about their movements. And so we are in very close collaboration with the immigration service, and also sometimes we do joint operations with our brothers on the other side of the divide. Just last week we had a joint operation to flash our criminals on the Aflao border with our two risk counterparts. And more than 17 criminals were rounded up. About 60 of them were on the wanted list of both Ghana and Togo. So we are collaborating with our neighbors and also within the country with sister agencies who have direct link with the Fulani, like the immigration, who registered them and so forth.
This year, before we go, we have a quick test coming in all the way from Waziz Donlais, saying the Fulanis are not operating themselves. They are led by town bad boys. So the security should be aware of these bad boys in the society. So it comes back to the issue of collaboration with the communities. Are you letting them know that they should give up those bad boys?
Exactly. We are on a very strict and vigorous standardization process. In the northern and the northern sector, especially in Tamale, and then down south in the Brown Hafu region, we know that these foreign people are becoming emboldened because of the local boys. And you agree with me that this is the third or fourth generation of Fulanis.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, some of them have made very good contact with our neighbors or our population, and without them, they cannot be so emboldened. We know all this, and we are working hard, thinking critically outside the box, and I know that our strategies will work.
We want to thank you so much, DCOP John Kudalo, for your time this evening.
Thank you, sir.
That's the Director General in charge of police operations, alerting us as to what they are doing. But we've spoken about collaboration. The Ghana Immigration Service is in charge of those who enter this country to ensure that they keep to the protocols that are existing. The head of public affairs of the Immigration Service is Francis Palm Detty. He's on the line now with us. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
Yes, I just want to pick it from where we spoke about collaboration. How do you collaborate? At what stage do you tell the police that this is now within your domain?
It's important to that as our mandate We our mandate basically is to protect and secure the country's frontiers and also regulate the activities of foreigners in our country. At the entry point, we ensure that everybody who comes into this country has a travel document and the appropriate visas where necessary are in place. With regards to our ECOWAS neighbors, we have an ECOWAS protocol with them. And this protocol allows them to enter for 90 days, after which they have to either return or apply for an extension. In respect of persons we refer to as Fulani or Fulani herdsmen, I can say we have about two categories of Fulani herdsmen. One, those who are employed by Ghanaians to take care of their cattle, and those who have actually come inside the country from neighboring countries with their cattle.
Mm-hmm.
For those who are coming in as employees of Ghanaians, they come usually through the appropriate and approved entry points.
Mm-hmm.
They come in with their travel documents, we attend to them, and they enter. For those who come in through the unapproved routes, usually we've observed that they travel at night, and sometimes they use routes that are quite dangerous and bushy and difficult for you to even patrol that route. We have our border patrol units who are supposed to be patrolling the borders. But sometimes you have challenges where these routes that they use cannot be patrolled because of the terrain of the place. If these people enter the country and we come across them, the law allows us to return them back from where they came from. Somewhere, the early part of this year, we had decided to register the Fulani herdsmen because of the challenges that we are all having. And we've had a few logistical problems, but we hope that pretty shortly we'll surmount them. But it's also interesting to note that the Ghana Immigration Service is collaborating with the National Identification Authority,
mm-hmm.
since both institutions have the mandate to register foreigners in this country. We believe that with this collaboration, once the national identification process goes through and all those living in this country have that ID card, it becomes very easy to identify who a foreigner is and who a foreigner living in Ghana genuinely is and who is not also a Ghanaian. So with this national identification program, I believe it will also help us to do effective monitoring and also ensure that those who are in this country without appropriate documentation leave. But we collaborate with our security mm-hmm. services. You know, we have the DIFEC and the RECSEC. At these meetings, we share intelligence. We discuss amongst ourselves how to deal with these problems, such as this Fulani menace.
Mm-hmm. That's why, Mr. Pamdeti, please hold on for a while. We want to quickly speak to the president of the Fulani community in Ghana. He's also on the line now. Chief Alhaji Idrisu Mohammed Bingo, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
You hear of all the accusations. If it is not armed robbery, then it means we are talking about people's farmlands being destroyed and all. For you, have you tried to rein in your people for them to avoid all these things?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. And then good evening to your cherished listeners. In fact, we as community leaders, we have been doing our best educating them to be law-abiding citizens, to also, try not to. So unfortunately, I'm in heavy traffic. You can hear the horn blowing. Yes. But I hope you'll bear with me.
Yeah.
We've been trying our best, educating them, telling them things that they shouldn't do, things that are against the law. You understand?
Yeah.
So for that, we have been doing. But, human being, you can talk to the person. He says he has heard of it. He's gone. You don't know what he's going to do next. You understand?
Yes.
But that is in the case of the herdsmen. You see, let me correct this error. people refer all Fulanis to be herdsmen. You see, I don't know, herdsmen means those who are behind the cattle. Isn't it?
Yes.
The correct thing?
Yeah.
Those people herding the cattle, they are the herdsmen. But we have some Fulanis also who are not, herding cattle. They are, normal people doing their own business. So you see, then when the problems arise, then we categorize all of them to be Fulani herdsmen, Fulani herdsmen. So that is one thing that I think we have to correct this impression that is being created that all Fulani are herdsmen.
Yes. So you are saying that you have some who are doing legitimate business and are not...
Yes, they are not herdsmen. You see,
yeah.
And then the problem also is that most of the time, talking about these criminal activities, when criminal activities take place, you hear either the media or the police saying that the criminals or the suspects are believed to be of Fulani extraction. You see, and then I ask the question, so what determines a Fulani extraction? Do you see that somebody looking fair with some curly hair, and then you assume this man is a Fulani? Meanwhile, these Sahili African countries, all the people, they look alike, and we have different types along these lines, you see. So sometimes you see somebody, you refer to him as Fulani, but meanwhile, it's not a Fulani. You
yeah.
see, because you could go to Niger, you go to Mali, the Burkina Faso, and then all this country. You see the people, they all look alike. But
yeah.
Within them, there are different tribes. So if, for instance, you arrest a Zabarma person and you refer him as Fulani, you see that there's a problem there.
Yeah.
Chief, I don't know whether you are getting the point I'm trying to.
Chief, we are still discussing, so perhaps the listener will try to understand it. But for those you have identified as not being herdsmen, how do you ensure that they are also living according to the laws of this country?
Yes, this is what I'm saying. We'll be educating them. We'll be having a series of meetings with them. I have on record a lot of meetings that I have organized both, around the, country. We divided the country into two. We have the southern sector and the northern sector. And we had a series of meetings all aimed at educating our people, telling them, look, our image is going down because of some the activities of some of our people. You understand? So let us all come together and fight those among the who we know are of that kind of bad behavior or bad character. Let's try to flush them out. So for this, we are doing it, and we are doing it all the time.
We've heard DCOP Kudalo of the police talk about the issue, and presently we have online Francis Pamdeti of the Ghana Immigration Service, all trying to work on the concerns being discussed. How are you going to collaborate with them to even make the work much easier so that those with the good image will still continue to live peacefully?
We are ready to collaborate with them, to assist them to make their work successful. We are ever ready. We are ever ready to work with them. Because these things that is going on, we, the opinion leaders, are not happy at all. We are not happy at all of what is going on. Look, it is now becoming a xenophobia on our people. If you are working in town all the time in the news, Fulani, 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 it is something very, very worrisome to all of us. You understand what I'm saying? So we are ready to collaborate with anybody, the security people, the police. So everybody who need our assistance, we are ready to help.
Okay.
And beside that, we are also talking to our people, try to tell them to look out for those criminals, wherever they are. And let's try to expose them and then flush them out of our, you know, society, so that then we have a clean society like
okay.
before.
Yeah.
Because all these things is something very, very recently. You know, formerly, Fulani man is a decent person, very, very honest person. Everybody trusts this Fulani. People will buy cattle, plenty cattle, and leave it to the Fulani man deep in the bush. And they even sometimes take them so many months or years before they even visit there. Anytime they visit the place, they find their thing intact.
Okay.
But it is unfortunate that unfortunately some bad notes are among people have come into the system and they are trying to destroy our image.
Chief Mohammed Dingo, I guess your point is very well made, and you've also pledged your cooperation with the necessary authorities. I want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very, very much, too. Thank you.
Chief Alhaji Idrisu Mohammed Bingle is the president of the Fulani community in Ghana. But coming back to you, Mr. Francis Pamdeti, we've heard what a representative is saying, but also raising the concern that some may appear to be Fulanese, but because they all look alike, we tend to combine people who are not from that extraction. So what do you do to separate all the others for us to know that these are those committing crimes?
Yes, I share in his concern, and I also agree with this year particular Udano, that we should treat these matters on a case by case basis, and we should treat these individuals as criminals if investigations point to that, because truly, if we classify every highway robber as a Fulani because of their description, etc., it would give the wrong indication that we are looking out for Fulanis. But I believe that some of these robberies are not committed only by Fulanis. It's important for us to also appreciate the fact that there will be two of them in this society who are law-abiding and are following the rules. And it's important for the communities to help us to identify, just as we call on our communities to help us identify miscreants and thieves amongst us. In the same way, we are expecting that if that miscreant, a Ghanaian or a Fulani or any other foreigner, they should tip us off to deal with the matter. But I believe that sometimes the impression we are given is that we are going out to arrest Fulanis. But that is not the case. I believe that our security personnel do not have a case against any individual or groups of people, but we are looking at a trend which has been with us for some time.
Yeah.
But I agree with him that we shouldn't be going out there saying we are arresting Fulanis. It will give the wrong impression. We should treat each case on a case-by-case basis. Like I'm saying, the national identification program will definitely help us in identifying who a foreigner is and who a Ghanaian is and who a visitor is, because we will not be issuing such cards to visitors.
Okay.
It will just be foreigners who are resident in this country and Ghanaian. So I believe even as we are having challenges now, in the not-too-distant future, effective and efficient arrangements will be put in place to help us identify the good ones from the bad ones, in the manner of speaking.
Francis Pamdeti, we want to thank you very much.
Thank you, too.
That is the head of public affairs of the Immigration Service. But on a wider scale, we are looking at the security implications and also looking at the ECOWAS protocols on free movement of goods and people. The executive director of the West African Network for Peace Building, WANEP, Emmanuel Bombandi, is on the line now. You are welcome once again, sir.
Yeah, hello. Good evening.
Good evening. You've heard the other panelists on this particular issue speak about the fact that something is being done and the concerns being expressed. What are the general security implications for the sub-region in this country?
Well, if we want to talk about the general security situation, I think the threats to human security have already been articulated. And as it touches directly on what is beginning to be alarming, in which the public cannot travel in safety, you can understand our security agencies and their efforts to stem this menace in itself is challenged by the fact that you are dealing with the problems of crime, and yet the trends in terms of numbers is associated with a particular group. And so the danger is you do not want to deal with this security threat by creating another problem that is with a particular ethnic community that is regarded in the current situation as non-Ghanaian, and that is true in the sense that the majority of this ethnic group, Fulani, will not necessarily be Ghanaian. And therefore, it requires the type of strategic and holistic approach into how we deal with the threat in terms of the crime, but at the same time, isolate the problem itself and not make it a problem of that ethnic community, so that the ethnic community does not see itself as targeted and victimized. And to that extent, how we do these two, in my view, are important in respect of these protocols of ECOWAS and in respect of what we even stand for as the people of Ghana.
Yeah. So you are talking about a holistic approach, and you've observed and listened to the concerns of people and then what the security has been doing so far. What is your assessment of how it's been handled?
Now, very quickly, if you look at the trends, the type of crimes that are committed, we have to admit that they are committed as if to say, since we do not belong to that community, we can rape and walk away with a free conscience. The question is, have we succeeded in making Fulanis feel that they are outcasts, and since they do not belong, they can commit those types of crimes without any, so to speak, reflection in terms of their own conscience about what it means to commit those crimes? So there's that generality about it. Then secondly, our attitude in the past, if you look at the security operations such as Operation Cowlick, has been to drive them out of the country only for them to return. And so when I talk about a holistic approach, I think we need to begin to hold accountable the different stakeholders and engage, for example, with Fulani elders, particularly Fulanis who are Ghanaian. Do not forget that there are a number of Fulanis who are Ghanaian and who occupy leadership positions and who often get embarrassed that when we talk about highway crime, we associate it with Fulani who probably could be Ghanaian or non-Ghanaian. So I think we need to have a discourse in which, one, we want communities to own what is happening, for example, in their communities. In which areas do people stand on our highways and rob passengers? And as we do this, we help the police to be able to apprehend criminals, not because they are an ethnic group. And I thought I heard your panel articulate this very clearly. But we hold people who are committing crime individually accountable to the crimes that they commit. And the more we do this, the more we get the cooperation of the general Fulani community to bring out the elements in that community who are bad nuts. And the more we are able to do this, the more we can apprehend these criminals rather than make it look like it's a collective crime that is being committed by Fulanis. This would be my first level of reflection.
And your second level?
My second level then is to say that because the sub-region has protocol arrangements that we are part of, and because we now need to take to another level how we are able to detect these crimes that are being committed, that there is a type of support that continues to improve the mobility of our police service. For example, how do we study the bad spots that are accommodating to criminals who often hide there and then attack in the night? Working with the communities, we should be able to identify these bad spots so that the police in their mobility have a more vigilant watch in these particular areas. Because it's not all areas that robbery can easily happen, but there are quite a number of areas that are very convenient for these robbers to happen. If we're able to do that, we are then able to support the police in how either their mounting barriers or their mobile more frequently are then able to apprehend. Secondly, we the public, and particularly in those areas that are talked about as the spots, how do we educate the communities to be very good at providing the early warning information to the police, to be able to also make the police know in advance that such a crime is likely going to happen, so that the collaboration is then happening with the police and the communities in these particular areas. And of course, the bigger issues about identity cards and how we deal with people who come in, all help to be able to assuage this type of crime or to deal with this type of crime.
Dr. Emmanuel Bombande, I want to thank you very much for your input tonight too.
Thank you so much.
As Executive Director of the West African Network for Peace Building. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana and on Jura Radio, Boga, Walter Star Ho, and Sunrise FM, Kofodia. We are taking a quick break. We'll be back.
My guy, come and see this. Let me play Ochami Kwame's music video for you, eh? Live as it streams on my phone. You see proper streaming on my phone.
Oh, David, are you still using those phones?
I said, look at this video, eh? Look. Oh, this slow internet bar. Let me use this red phone. Oh, Charlie, my network's crap. Let me try this white one.
Oh, Gavet, here, use mine. On my network, you can browse the internet with the fastest 3.5G speed.
Enjoy the fastest 3.5G internet in over 26 cities and counting. Only on the number one network. Now, that's a fact. MTN. In the MTN. Everywhere you go.
Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. We have some of your tests here before we move on to the next story. The Fulanis are not operating themselves. I think we read that one earlier. And Abanga from Boko is saying these Fulanis should be sent out of the country. The robbery attacks is becoming rampant. And Akipus from Saboba Subtech, even though I am not a fan of Rawlings, I've missed him in these matters. The way forward is to gather data on their population through the National Identification Authority and charge their leaders to take responsibility for any bad action of their members. And Nantongma from Lamishigu, the Mills government should do well to find a way out of the Fulani herdsmen in the country, because Ghana is not free place for them to dwell. And Hosni Mubarak, T. Poli, ironically, these Fulani herdsmen are the same people taking care of Ghanaian cattle. So I don't know why the same people pose a threat to Ghanaians. And Chunala from Pandai, in fact, Ghana's freedom has been over-enjoyed by these Fulani herdsmen, and measures should be put in place to ensure free movement of people on roads and farmlands. And Francis Banankai from Wa West, the Fulani herdsmen cannot come to our country and be raping our wives and mothers. They must be sacked from the country. And Akuto from Achemda, I propose long journey buses should always have police escort to help solve the highway robbery. Behind the News, coming to you live on Radio Ghana, on Radio Central Cape Coast and Ubuntu 96.5 FM. It is not easy to relinquish one's position, especially when the position is one of high repute. When it relates to politics, people will go to every length to hold on to the positions, sometimes to the extent of abusing incumbency. There have been countless times when opposition politicians accuse ruling governments of abusing incumbency. We just want to speak to Bright Akwiti, a legal expert and also a leading member of the CPP, on his views on the issue of incumbency. You are welcome, sir, to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you can please go down a little on the volume of your set so that we don't get a feedback. And thank you so much. Well, when we are talking about incumbency abuse, what is it?
Well, there has not been an accepted definition of incumbency. In other words, nobody has sat down to determine incumbency. But the dictionary meaning tells me is the person in charge of affairs at the moment, the person occupying a position at the moment, politically. It may have other meaning as far as political dispensation is concerned. But speaking English, I would say that it's the person in charge at the moment.
Yeah, so do we see it as a big problem in this country?
Well, it's a big problem. Our democracy is still very young. In that infant stage, we're trying to build it, we're trying to develop it, and it's dynamic. We're trying to improve it, and we think that all of us, it's incumbent on all of us to assist to develop it and improve it for the well-being of the state, for the well-being of the Ghanaians, so that there will be a level playing field for all politicians at the critical times when they have to go and tell the people of Ghana to vote for them.
Yes.
The situation is such that politicians are taking Ghanaians for a ride. Let me take you quickly to the area of inauguration of projects or shortcutting of projects or shortcutting for projects and commissioning of projects. They seem to be left the last minute to the end of the political era where one is going to ask for votes. Then they think Ghanaians are so forgetful or so inexperienced or immature politically that, oh, we can go and then it's December. Let's start this one in October. Let's do this one in November. Let's do this close to the election. The Ghanaians think that we're doing well. I think it's an abuse of the situation. And we should all agree that we'll get a life that will create a level playing field for all of us.
Yeah.
As politicians, we go in as politicians to go and play a game. Let's take it to be the game of football. Only two players can use their hands. The 20 other players do not have to use their hands. They don't have to touch the ball. You don't have to fight on the field. We are all agreed on these rules. Then we also agree that when the referee whistles, we all have to stop playing because an infringement has been committed. As politicians, a similar thing can be done. So we commit ourselves to certain rules, and we ourselves discipline ourselves to obey those rules. And I believe that if we do it that way, it will go a long way to assure everybody that there's a level playing field and Ghanaians will be treated as mature people, their views will be respected, and they will make progress.
Yeah. Sometimes this question keeps coming up, that how can an incumbent government go about its activities without the action being misconstrued as one that is meant at seeking votes?
You see, I would want to suggest that, for instance, the last 6 months before elections, maybe the July preceding the December where the elections will be held, there should be no shortcuttings, there should be no commissioning of new projects. If you have any new project, as a player in the game, also abiding by the rules, no new projects will be commissioned, no new shortcuttings will be done. Let us all agree, so that when it's getting to July, do all that you have to do before July. So we give ourselves a time frame that when I'm in office, July to December, no shortcuts. I think that can be done. Then secondly, if you're a minister of state, you're going to your constituency or attending a function, there's nothing wrong with taking the Land Cruiser or the Pajero or the Mercedes or whatever vehicle has been assigned to you to go, because maybe for your security, for your position, you will need that vehicle because that's the vehicle assigned to you. But don't take a second vehicle from the ministry. Don't take a third vehicle from the ministry, because that second vehicle is driven by somebody who is paid by the state. The second one, the third one, the fourth one, they are all driven by state drivers, paid for. So don't use that. If you want to do that, go to your political party. Because the political parties are given vehicles by the Electoral Commission. I remember the CPP was given 10 tickets. If you have 10 tickets, there's no reason why you should go and take a state vehicle with a state driver paid for to go for your campaign. If you do that, and you yourself, you discipline yourself that, look, I am going with my vehicle, or even I'll even drop the state vehicle. I'll take my own four-wheel drive or two-wheel drive or whatever I take and go. Then the electorate will respect us as politicians. They know we respect their views and their interests and their ambitions.
Yeah. So right up with it, there is this other concern. Perhaps a politician might try to go by what you've suggested, but the news media will still be reporting on things being done on the ground. And assuming that is the incumbent, won't some people still read meanings into it as favoring the incumbent because there are things to report on?
Yes, the news media, they themselves also should be able to draw attention to the politician. But look, my friend, the rules of engagement require that you don't do this. The newspaper should be able to do it because you're part of the system, the fourth rank they call them. They should be able to draw our attention to the fact that Mr. Kwete went on this campaign trail or went to do this at this point or this event, and he did ABC. If you draw attention to the fact that he breached the rules or acted in breach of the rules, others will be circumspect in doing similar things. So we would want to work with the media because they should be the watchdog, the referees. They should whistle and say, no, it's a foul, it's a free kick, it's a penalty kick, the ball has gone out of touch. They will help us to build a better Ghana.
We want to thank you very much for your time this evening on these issues.
You're most welcome.
Mr. Bright Akwete is a legal expert and also a leading member of the CPP. He put himself directly in the issues, we politicians. That is how he addressed it. But Dr. Lloyd Amwa is an academic lecturer at the Ashesi University and has been observing some of these things. Dr. Amwa, you are welcome to the show once again.
Yeah, thank you. I hope you are doing well.
We are doing well. You've listened to an active politician, and you saw exactly the way he drew himself into it as a politician. Can there ever be a time when a politician or an incumbent government would not be accused of not abusing that incumbency?
Well, I think it's a very dicey situation, kind of catch-22, because the nature of policy making, the nature of governance, is said that especially in Ghana, what we have is a very center-based kind of power structure and government structure. So that the presidency has a lot of weight constitutionally in defining policy and then using the state bureaucracy to implement those policies. So the ruling government is visible. The ruling government is obviously seen as the dispenser of favor, of allocation of resources and the rest of them. And so there's a certain difficulty regarding the ruling government and therefore the party in power and the possible abuse of incumbency. But I think that increasingly in Ghana, that idea is becoming redundant. Supreme Court rulings were given, for example, on the need to give fair access to political parties on radio station, on GBC. And even that has been even extended further, where we have a lot of, you know, FM stations, for example, and TV stations. These TV stations and media houses try to be objective, which means then that they offer the space for counter viewpoints in the political arena. So increasingly, the use of incumbency solely as a vehicle for winning political power, you know, has in my view, become something that cannot be sustained. You have the internet, you have social media sites, you have all kinds of avenues for those parties in opposition to make their case. And so I think that increasingly, as our systems of governance improves, and I think we are inching forward as the years go by. I think politicians are becoming aware, you know, ruling parties are becoming aware that you can't just abuse incumbency and think that you have sealed the victory in an election. That's my view, I think.
Yes, but are there dangers, assuming perhaps a government wants to take undue advantage of this?
Yeah, of course there are dangers. For example, media freedom can be affected because the government will decide to monopolize the space for national discourse. And that means that counter views cannot be heard. And that means that the voters will be short-changed because we will not have the opportunity to weigh different viewpoints and take an informed decision. Number two, the attempt to abuse incumbency can mean that national resources, which are consistently scarce for our republic, can be abused. For example, resources that otherwise should be used for development processes and projects can be tapped into clandestinely, illegally, for purposes of winning an election, because the ruling power, the ruling government has accessed these funds and knows that it cannot be checked until after the election. If it wins, then it runs away with it. You know, so there are economic costs, and there are also governance costs in the attempt to abuse incumbency. In the long run, it can also lead to rebellion. I mean, if the polity decides that, well, this government or a particular government is intent on exploiting incumbents to win elections, the outcome of the elections will be challenged. If the processes are not managed, you have a civil war. If you look closely at this issue, it can be potentially problematic for a country like Ghana or any other country in the world, the US, you know, anywhere. But I think more so in developing countries where we are working very hard to improve our systems. In that context, it becomes particularly problematic. Yes.
Yeah. But sometimes, let me ask: is incumbency not a disadvantage too, because of the proliferation of media? You have been accused, so you also want to come out strongly to show precisely what you've done.
Yeah, you are right. It can be a disadvantage because there's pressure on you. You have a manifesto. You make promises. You want to show that, you know, these promises are being pursued and implemented. The other thing, the disadvantage also is that because of incumbency, there are limitations to, for example, what it is that the president can do as a political. And a typical example is, for example, looking at Nana Akufo-Addo now, who's gone on what he calls a listening tour. He's not in power, so he has the space to actually go down to our people and engage them. The president cannot do that because he has state functions to go to deal with, and he has work to do, official duties to perform. You know, so you are right. I think that's a fantastic question. Incumbency is a double-edged sword. The attempt to exploit it can be problematic, and also the fact of having it can also be problematic, because as you rightly said, you want to prove yourself, and that can mean overplaying your hand or overreaching yourself or overextending yourself. Yeah. I think you are right, and I think I share that view.
So if you cannot be a sitting duck, let's look at a quick one from Mr. Bright Akwete, that perhaps 6 months to elections, there should be no shortcutting, no commissioning of projects. Can that ever be possible, a developing country?
To legislate that would be difficult, because the reality of our politics has shown that the mere fact of incumbency has not guaranteed a win for any political party. The Jerry Rawlings years, and you know, the President Rawlings administration from like 2000. From 92 to 2000, right?
Yes.
The NDC had incumbency. Before then, it existed as a revolutionary part, entity, the PNDC. But it lost power in 2000. You understand? And in 4 years, from 2000 to 2008, regardless of incumbency, the NDC lost power in spite of having the media spotlight, having the government machinery at their beck and call, okay. They lost power. You know, so it doesn't really deterministically, you know, provide a kind of safe readout or you know, refuge. You know, so unless you are saying that because you have incumbents, you can win every election, and then it becomes important to legislate. But I think the honourable Leonard Bright Akwete is showing the frustration that other political parties have to face with a seeming massive behemoth and kind of ruling party with the benefit of incumbents.
Dr. Lloyd Amwa,
it's about political strategy and tactics.
Dr. Lloyd Amwa,
and the performance of the ruling party. If it doesn't perform, And if the other opposition, you know, parties strategize properly, they can beat the party in power. And okay. and the facts of our recent, you know, politics show that it can be the case. Yes.
Dr. Lloyd Amo, I want to thank you very much for your opinion on this particular issue.
Thank you for having me.
It's a lecturer at the Ashesi University. We are moving on to our last story. Some members of the Convention People's Party have expressed concern about the postponement of the National Delegates Congress. Yesterday on our program, the spokesperson for the Indum Exploratory Committee gave some possible reasons why the Congress may have been delayed, part of it being that some members of the present executive body were afraid of losing their positions. You may recall that our effort to reach a scheduled party official failed. However, we now have the Deputy National Youth Organizer of the CPP to respond to some of the issues raised in relation to the date of the Congress. Francis Opaitete, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much, and I must say thank you. Good evening to you, the good listeners of this important program.
Yes. Your quick assessment of the Indum Exploratory Committee before we come to your concerns.
Well, I don't have much to say there. Dr. Indum thinks he has a duty to perform to lead this country. And therefore, he taxed the young men of this party, of this country, to go out there and bring those information. So based on that information, he can take the decision in election 2012. I think that is his personal assignment. And I don't have much to say about it.
The concern is that perhaps the party seeing that could have taken advantage and also added its weight so that it becomes a party affair and not an individual's. Couldn't you have done that?
I don't think
assessing
the party,
viability of your candidates.
Yes, I don't think the party has not done anything after election 2012. The party has done so much to find out what happened, and we recorded such abysmal performance. So the party has done its own. And if Dr. Pakwesi Indum as an individual also decided to do otherwise, that one, I mean, I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah.
My only problem has to do with the interview you granted a young man, Comrade Nii, Richard Amma yesterday,
yeah.
and concerning the change of the Congress, National Delegate Congress date.
Mm-hmm.
That is where my problem is as a Deputy National Youth Organizer of the CPP.
And we want you to respond to it. The fact mentioned that perhaps is because some people were afraid.
Yes. The young man mentioned yesterday that the CPP is not used to electing its officers. You understand? And if you put out such an information, which is not true, you are not only demonstrating that you lack knowledge about the current and past events in the party, but you are also embarrassing of, you are sort of causing great embarrassment to the party, and that is what we don't like. This party has suffered enough humiliation, and we don't want it to continue. Since 2000, after this party has been restored from proscription, we have used democratic means to elect or to select our parliamentary candidates. Our local officers at the polling station, ward levels, constituency levels, regional levels, and the national levels. So to stand on an important medium like Behind the News to say that CPP hitherto does not use elections to select its leader is most unfortunate. And that is why I am here to let the whole country know, or our cherished listeners know, disregard that statement, because it's not only unfortunate, but it's also very divisive.
Yeah, okay.
We don't need such statements on air.
Okay.
Just
hold on for a moment so that we get it from Richard Nii Amma, whether he agrees with your assertion. Richard, you are welcome.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
That is what your party official is saying, that the CPP has been democratic right from the beginning.
I am surprised at Opaitete's reaction, because I never said the CPP has not been democratic. I said, and I want to quote what I said again, that there has not been competition in the constituency, polling station, and regional elections. That is different from saying the party has not been democratic. I said that because I can give you, for example, Paza constituency. During the 2007 Congress, they had officially only two constituency executives, okay? Because the situation has been that people have not been interested in the party. Now what is happening is that we've been able to increase enthusiasm in the party. People are clamoring. They are rushing for the positions. And so there is competition everywhere. And that is what I said. The party has not been used to this process. And that is what is creating problems in some areas, which has led to some being cancelled, some being taken to court, and all those kind of things. So I want our party to understand that there's a difference between competition and democracy.
So you are saying that the party is now very attractive.
Yes, wasn't competition because people were not attracted to it, and they were not coming to compete for position.
Okay.
For position. And so anytime there's election, it is either unopposed, or they will just go and do popular acclamation because there's...
Richie, because of our time, we thank you for that clarification. But Francis, let me come back to you. That is what your colleague is saying. He is even pushing that the party has become so attractive.
No, I mean, you yesterday's interview had to do with the kind of work they did for Dr. Pakwesi Indum, of which I don't have any problem with. Our party, you see, the record card that we have as a symbol is not there for nothing. The record card is there to show that even the hen knows when the day breaks, but it waits for the cock to crow to announce it, you understand?
Yes.
So what we are saying here is that there are some issues that if you don't, you are not the communication director of the party, if you are not the general secretary of the party, if you are not, the spokesperson for the Congress Planning Committee, you don't have to go and address an issue. They ask you an issue concerning the Congress. What I believe my learned brother could have done, or my colleague could have done, was to recommend or to refer you to the appropriate party authority responsible for that to handle it.
Francis, you know, because of our time, we'll find some time because we have to delve a little bit into the date and all. And
no problem. I do appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much too for joining us and understanding. Thank you so much. Francis Opai Tete is with the CPP. Before we go, some tests here. This one says, hi, Kingsley. I suggest that anybody caught in robbery should be dealt with in accordance with the law. You, Farouk Tamale, and someone's Azong Tamale. Kingsley, the Fulanis have become a stone in our flesh and they will soon take over the whole country. Ghana is too free. And Baba Musa, it is about time to flush out the Fulani people out of Ghana because their activities are very harmful and life-threatening to Ghanaians, ranging from armed robbery to all criminal activities. And George Amuyao Bogoso, the Fulanis must be restricted from entering the country because some of them are killing our people. Let's include the Fulanis in the NYEP to reduce this unfortunate situation. Now, who do this bulliga? And if criminal Ghanaians outside could be deported, then the Fulani herdsmen can equally be sent back to their destination. That is what one sent without a name. We want to thank our production team for all the effort. Christopher C. Bright Agama and Edmund Tete, John Poby, Victoria Ahajiwe, our production assistants, with Hannah Usubempa as the controls. My name is Kingsley Odinchere.